Is Charlie Manson crazy?
Well, whatever that means. Sure, he's crazy as mad as a hatter. What difference does it make? You know, a long time ago, being crazy meant something. Nowadays, everybody's crazy.
Well, you come off, you imply things that are unproven. You come off just to make entertainment rather than report what really is in fact. What is in fact is that the people around me wanted me to be what you called rock and roll singer. I wasn't even thinking of anything like that, you know. I do what I do. I ride a motorcycle and I play a guitar. And my road is mine. I keep a gun in my boot and a knife in my pocket, and I do what I want. I'm free, pretty much. And people come around me, and they like my music, and they say, why don't you do this and this and that and so forth?
Visit the website at Mike Hunt's On Fire.
What?
Oh, God.
Dot com.
No.
Is that for real?
Yeah.
No.
Yes. Mike Hunt's On Fire.
That's the website.
Dot com.
Jackie's very upset that he didn't think of that first.
Jackie thought he owned that.
Killing me. Y'all are killing me.
Ah, that's funny.
Hello, you metal freaks. This is King Diamond, and you're listening to 3RingRadio.com with Shane. You better stay tuned.
I've done everything he told me to do. And I got to thinking, now, why don't this guy do something I tell him to do? And he said, no. I said, well, how comes I'm always doing what you tell me to do, but then you never do what I say do? And he said, well, blah, blah, blah. So I said, now you do what I say. And he said, no. I said, you do exactly what I say. I might go to Libya. I might go see the Ayatollah. I might go to France and catch somebody in France that's I'm kind of upset with. Remorse for what? You people have done everything in the world to me. Doesn't that give me equal right? I can do anything I want to you people at any time I want to, because that's what you've done to me. If you spit in my face and smack me in the mouth and throw me in solitary confinement for nothing, what do you think's going to happen when I get out of here? Maybe I haven't done enough. I might be ashamed of that, for not doing enough, for not giving enough, for not being more perceptive, for not being aware enough, for not understanding, for being stupid. Maybe I should have killed 400 or 500 people, then I would have felt better. Then when I felt like I really offered society something. You've got it stuck in your brain that I murdered somebody. What do you want to call me a murderer for? I've never killed anyone. I don't need to kill anyone. I think it. I have it here. The street is my world. I don't pretend to go uptown and be anything fancy. I can, but I find more real in the world that I'm in than I do the tinsel. And the real world is the one I have to deal with every day, you know. Believe me, if I started murdering people, there'd be none of you left.
Hello, is Jim Van Beber in?
Yes, this is.
How do you pronounce your last name?
Van Beber.
Van Beber, okay. My name's Shane. I'm calling from 3-Ring Radio.
Hey, Shane. How you doing?
Good, man. Brian Windorf from Chicago Underground Film Festival gave me your number.
Right, yeah. We were trying to set this up sometime earlier, but didn't convalesce.
Is now a good time to talk?
Now would be perfect time.
Excellent. Can I start recording?
Sure.
Cool, man. All right, Jim Van Beber, filmmaker.
Greetings.
Yeah, how you doing, man? The movie, The Manson Family. Is that the complete title?
Yeah, that's the new title. It was shot under the title of Charlie's Family, but in this new generation of, kids who may not really know, make the connection between the name Charlie and family, we just decided to make it obvious.
Right on, man. So what are you doing today on the anniversary of the Manson murders?
Oh, I'm going to celebrate by going to see The Who at the Hollywood Bowl tonight.
You're kidding me?
No.
I guess half of the Who.
That's right. Roger and Pete. First time I saw him, I think, was in, 83, and, that's when Kenny Jones was first with him. But, they've certainly evolved a lot of different styles since then, but from what I hear, Pete's kicking out the windmills, and, at least him and Roger are full peak performance.
Well, so that's all you're doing on the anniversary. It's ironic I'm calling you on the anniversary of the Manson death.
Yeah, kind of creepy.
Yeah? It wasn't planned, really.
Right.
And today I talked to an Adam Gorightly, gentleman who did a book, Santa Susanna, Black Magic, Mind Control, and the Manson Family Mythos.
Well, there you go.
Are you familiar with that book?
No, I'm not, actually.
But, well, I spoke with this guy, and he tells me today's the anniversary, and I didn't even know that when I made the calls. So your film's been an underground hit for many years. How'd this come about where you're finally bringing it out and showing it?
Well, it's been a long, torturous project because the thing wasn't completely financed when we jumped into it. So we went from like 88 to 92 just drumming up the money to get it all shot and processed, and then to get to a finished cut, raising the money to get more stuff processed and renting a flatbed editor, editing machine. It was a stop and go thing, very poverty stricken, but finally I had a cut in 96. And that got accepted to show at the Fant Asia Festival in Montreal in the summer of 97. And then it showed again at the Chicago Underground Film Festival in 97 in a work in progress. It was basically the cut, but it still needed, its sound mix and negative cutting, all that stuff.
So I guess does it work in your favor that it's been so widely distributed before an official release?
That's hard for me to say. All I know is a lot of bootlegs got out, and it seemed like pretty much everybody had a copy of that old version, but I feel pretty safe in saying that, what they'll see in the theaters is not a whole new animal, but certainly a polished, finished, animal. And, I just think it works so much better with its sound mix and, all the dissolves and optical effects put in there. And, we've mixed it in 5.1 surround sound, and it's playing that way in theaters.
Cool, man.
And, it'd be definitely a better experience than watching a crappy dub of a dub of a dub.
Right on. Well, you have to excuse me. I'm a fan. I'm a sort of a fan of Manson. And so that was the main reason to call you. When I ran your name real quick on the internet, found out you've done so much more. You've worked with I wish I knew how to pronounce their name.
Necrophagia.
So, Necrophagia. Yeah, Killjoy. Yeah, I got their new CD right in front of me. So what'd you do with them?
Necrophagia.
Necrophagia.
Phagia.
Sounds like an Italian guy in Chicago. Necrophagia.
They started out in like 85, and then that lineup blew apart, but Phil Anselmo and Killjoy put their heads together in like 96 or 97.
Right.
Basically reformed the band with Dustin Havnen on bass and Wayne Faber on drums. And then when they made their debut album, Holocausto De La Muerta, I think is the name of it. Yeah. They contacted me to make a sort of long-form video where I ended up doing like 5 songs in a half-hour wraparound package. And that thing was called Through Eyes of the Dead. And then I also did 2 more videos for them for... Cannibal Holocaust song and They Dwell Beneath off of their second album.
So how old are you?
Let's see, I'm 39, I'll be 40 in November.
Okay, right on, because I'd expect you to expect you to be a little older. I'm surprised you even know about Necrophagia, to be honest with you. You know, I am. I expect the filmmaker that's making this to be an older guy, maybe. You know, you sound really hip man, or underground, or street, you know, a little bit, man.
Well,
I think I read that...
Being independent, you know, I really haven't, you know, injected myself into mainstream as of yet, or even attempted to, and I've been, you know, just been very protective of getting my cut of the Manson family complete to my standards and out the way I wanted it. And it ended up taking a lot of time.
So are you a Manson sympathizer?
I wouldn't say sympathizer. I'd say I made the film really to be objective. As far as, like, after doing all the research I did, I came to the conclusion that really what happened to them was almost a domino effect of disillusion, and then one violent episode starting with... you know, probably the gang rape of Simi Sherry, which just darkened the attitude, and then Tex Watson ripped off a Hollywood dope dealer, Lots Papa Crow, who Charlie ended up shooting in the stomach. He mistakenly thought he had killed him, and he mistakenly thought that Lots Papa was a Black Panther, and so he wound the family up into a wave of panic. And then you had Bobby Beausoleil stab Gary Hinman, and, you know, I believe the theory that the girls cocked up this, you know, copycat murder scheme to throw doubt on Bobby and get him released from, you know, prosecution in the Hinman case. And Charlie had a lot of bad energy, you know, from being shunned by Terry Melcher, and I just sort of see it as a string of violent things that all go together, refuting the prosecutor's, you know, case that Charlie was trying to start a race war based on the Beatles' White Album.
So that was more Charlie telling those people what they wanted to hear.
It was Vince Bugliosi having to sell a jury on being able to hang Manson along with the people who actually put the knives and the bullets into the victims. So, you know,
So, you know, you say you're not a sympathizer when you got started, at least, but afterwards, are you? Do you sympathize with Charlie now?
The only sort of sympathy they can garner is that they've become examples. You know, if there's such a fairness, or such a thing as fairness in the judicial system, they certainly haven't received it in an era where people who have done more heinous things, I think, have, you know, gotten parole or basically more breaks than these people have, because they have been hung out to dry as, you know, the poster child for everything that went wrong with the hippies. So it's a mixed bag. I can't say I'm very, very sympathetic. I mean, I would like to see Leslie Van Houten get paroled.
Wow.
I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, well, for all the people, you think Charles Manson deserves his prison sentence? Because that seems to be what attracts most people to Charlie's case, is that they don't think he deserves what he got.
Well, that's true. I mean, you can say that he never actually, you know, killed anybody, but he did shoot Lots Papa Crow and then told the family that he had killed.
But that's not what he got in trouble for, right?
No, but then again, he drove, Patty, Tex, and Leslie to the La Bianca house. That would be, you know, later on here in the morning hours of tonight, 35 years ago. And went in with Tex and tied up Rosemary,
Lino
LaBianca, and then, you know, left him there and went out and expressly gave orders to murder him.
Yeah, that's a good, yeah.
So, I mean, you know, it's pretty dicey. It's not like he can really claim that he had nothing to do with it.
Yeah. It's just an interesting character and an interesting time. You're not into any of these conspiracy theories?
I don't give those a lot of weight. I read The Ultimate Evil by Maury Terry.
Oh, yeah.
Has even, like, draw parallels between Manson and Son of Sam.
Right.
And I find it just an excuse to sell paperback books.
You know, I've been working on a book about the process with the gentleman, or person that's working on it with me. And what, pardon me?
That's fascinating.
Yeah, well, I don't know how, it seems like the Maury Terry stuff is interesting, but you're right, it's nothing more than an interesting read, sort of injecting some fiction into his non-fiction, you know, but you don't see anything true with the whole Manson process tie-in. Is there anything about that in your movie?
No, I didn't touch upon that. Basically, you know, it has been documented that Manson did get involved with the Church of the Process and at least have some, you know, lip service connections to him at one point in the late 60s. But I think that all pretty much was dried up and over with by the time he had his group of followers and was out at Spahn Ranch and Barker Ranch.
Yeah, it's just a coincidence.
You know, he connected with a lot of weird people out here in Hollywood in 67, you know, through 68.
So it's just some sort of coincidence again. Some sort of...
It's just they ran into each other, you know, I think. And, you know, he was dabbling in all sorts of, you know, pseudo-religions, Scientology.
Right, right.
And the process.
You know, I love how Charlie, you know, he's one of the, you know, he's, the greatness of Charlie is he's so quotable. Everyone has a quote, I swear.
That's true. I mean, he is a very charismatic, you know, he's a hell of a talker.
But he spoke
thing to watch.
The wonderful thing about Charlie to me, why I love Charlie, isn't with all these other weirdos. I don't know if he's, like you said, innocent or guilty. You know, he seems a little of both. But the thing is, he was a great media manipulator. You know, and he really spoke in sound bites, and it was wonderful. When I bring up process, everyone has to bring up a stupid quote, and I'm sure you know it. Me and whatever were one and the same. You know, this quote with him and the founder of the process.
Oh, Robert DeGrimson.
Yeah, me and Robert DeGrimson are one and the same or something. And I say, so what? Charlie was telling some dude what he wanted to hear. It doesn't mean anything, you know.
Oh, exactly. No, I mean, he's a... I think, you know...
Never say never to always, I'll never say always to none. To seem is to dream a dream, my love, 'cause one is one is one. For always is all is forever, 'cause one is one is one. Pick inside yourself for your father, all is none, none is one. It's time to call time from behind you. The illusion has been just a dream. Valley of death and I'll find you. Now is when on a sunshine beam. So bring only your perfection, for their love will surely be. Cold, pain, fear, or hunger, you can see, you can see, you can see.
Jim.
Hey, Jim.
Sorry about this. It's working now, I think.
Okay.
So when you said it was, it is working, I'm watching it work. But when you said before it was creepy that we were talking on the anniversary of the Manson murders, were you saying you thought I was creepy?
No, 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 not at all. It's just that I'm doing publicity for, you know, a film about this case on the 35th anniversary, just the circumstances.
Yeah, well, you know, I think it's not creepy that it stopped recording right as you were laying into your thoughts on how Manson was a cool dude. Or maybe not a cool dude, but how he was... We left off with the... and it's weird, my tape player breaks, you know, whatever this... The computer freezes up. It never has done that before.
Well, Prosecutor Vince Bugliosi would have you believe that Charles Manson stopped his watch during the trial. So, there you go.
Well, and see, he stopped the interview. You know, I might have to start reading more into these conspiracy theories. But it stopped right when we talked about Manson telling you what he wants you to hear, what you want to hear. When in reference to the process quote and stuff like that, and you were talking about what a character he was, and how I was telling you why I thought he was great,
right?
Because he spoke and sound, he manipulated the snakes, and the snakes being the media to me, mm-hmm. and to watch him manipulate the media and give everyone the soundbite that they were looking for, you know.
He's the king of soundbites.
His ratings gold, as I'm sure as some talk show producer would say.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if he wasn't so well-spoken and so entertaining, I doubt that the media would, you know, trot him out every year to boost their ratings in one form or another, you know.
So does that mean it was easy for you to get investors in your film, The Manson? And the name of it's The Manson Family.
The Manson Family, right. Actually, it was a pretty hard process. Getting, you know, even through a principal photography, raising money. Because I had made a feature prior to that, a street gang epic called Deadbeat at Dawn, and that had done poorly. And so without a really great money-making track record, it was difficult.
Well, it seems to be, I read a foreign... A horror zine. I was at a friend's house and it said, "The Manson Family, this is the new wave of horror."
Hmm.
You didn't see that?
No, I haven't seen it. I haven't been keeping up a lot on just been doing a lot of press. I haven't really seen the fruits of it yet.
No, I hear you. It says like that. It has a big, like, two-page, nice photos, everything, real nice spread. And it talks about this film being the future of filmmaking. Now, I'm up on Manson, and somehow there's... And I love bootlegs, and I get a lot of them. Somehow this one's escaped me. I've never seen it, so...
Well, just hold out for the finished feature.
I'm going to come and see it at Chicago Underground Film Fest.
Fantastic.
Yeah, for sure. Fantastic. Boy, you have been doing a lot of interviews, huh?
Yeah.
Are you sick of them at this point?
Oh, no, not at all.
Are you sick of talking Manson?
No, I dedicated a big chunk of my life getting this film done the right way, so I have no problem, you know, speaking about the case.
So what are the more interesting points of this case to you?
I don't know. I think it's just, it's the impact that he's had on the media and the fear that he put into the public. And like I said, how he's almost, in some people's eyes, at least culturally, he's like the poster boy for the death of the 60s movement. You had a handful of bad things after Woodstock. You had Altamont, Patty Hearst, but I think, the group of hippies that were the Manson family really put the scare into Los Angeles and stopped having people pick up hitchhikers and sold lots of guard dogs and handguns and deadbolts. The whole case just has a sort of a magic mix of incredible brutality, hippie mysticism, communal living, Hollywood, those ingredients are hard to beat when you're trying to make a,
Yeah, the one scene that people... A crime film, did you say?
Yeah, that's pretty much how I would classify this. I wouldn't say it's a horror film. It's more of a true crime, I think.
Well, I guess maybe they're talking reality TV almost with horror movies now.
Yeah, geez.
I thought
the horrifying thing is reality TV.
Yeah,
that's me.
You know, I think it's too bad that this didn't come out a couple of years ago before all of the serial killer DVDs that have hit the blockbusters. Because man, those things suck.
Yeah, pretty much.
Holy shit!
The one that sort of stood out for me as having some integrity and being fairly well made was Bundy. I don't know if you saw that.
Oh yeah, that was a good one. I did like that. It just because they had the girl's legs tied up so night, you know, it was like fucking crazy tied up women.
Yeah, no, I mean they went for it right down to his execution, which was lengthy and detailed, and that film seemed like it was at least trying to tell you the story of Ted Bundy. But
yeah,
where like Dahmer to me seemed like
a love story,
gay one act play, you know.
Yeah, right. And but Gene was okay.
Which one?
Gene.
I thought sunk by its production values. I didn't think it was terribly well made. I guess it had its tone right. It was okay. It was better than Dahmer, which, you know, was bloodless. I mean, it was shocking to see that. Towards the end, they have a shot of Jeffrey Dahmer reaching inside of this kid's chest, and there's not a drop of blood. It's like the heart removal in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Well, you know, I said that they should have a subtitle, Dahmer, the love story.
Yeah,
cause
yeah,
it's
pretty much.
It was like you said, a gay play or whatever. It was sort of.
It's almost like Monster, this film with Charlize Theron.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, well, killers fall in love too. You know. Okay, you know, whatever. Take your feminist agenda and find somebody more sympathetic to build a movie around, for crying out loud.
Yeah, Arlene Wuornos isn't the most sympathetic creature, is she?
Not for my money.
Hey, man, so, you know, I run a quick search on you on the internet, and the first couple things that caught my eye are ex-con and Aryan Nation. What does this mean to you?
What's this?
Yeah, ex-con and Aryan Nation.
Ex-con and Aryan Nation.
Yeah. Do they have the wrong Jim Van Bieber?
Bieber.
Bieber.
What freaking listing is this? Like I said, I've avoided the internet.
Are you an ex-convict?
Yes.
Okay.
Aryan Nation? No, I'm not involved.
Okay, there you go. Yeah. Aryan Nation. Well, you're a white guy, so they might have just mistaken you for Aryan. Are you a white guy? I don't know.
I am a white guy. Okay. What freaking website is this?
You know what? I wish I knew. I think it was just on Google, like a posting about filmmaker. So, and I didn't get to read everything about you, so it just said, like, this guy's, you know. That's what it said. It's a posting on it. It's not a news article. I didn't see a news article on you saying that you were a definitive Nazi.
Well, I guess, the internet is the biggest gossip post on demand, and you can say anything you want about anybody on there.
You can, and
the only reason I can think that anybody could infer that at all is because I chose to portray Bobby Postway in this film. Is Aryan Nation. I mean, since he's been in prison. I mean, you know, that's established, but he's just a character I'm playing. I'm no more like Bobby Beausoleil than I was like Ricky Casso when I portrayed a loose version of him in My Sweet Satan, a short I made, or...
Oh, right on. I wanted to ask you. So you portrayed Beausoleil in your movie?
Yes.
Oh, cool. Right on, man.
Yeah. It's just, I love to act. And I looked for a part that I could fit into physically. And so, we had a matchup. As far as his belief system or any of them, I'm probably, light years away.
Yeah, I dig. I just, that's what I saw, and I wanted to ask. But you were in jail, so that's good. Well, it's nice to know that someone in prison, a convict, is doing something with themselves.
Yeah.
Making films, that's good. It's a lot better than robbing banks or whatever, so whatever it is you do. About Ricky now that is a kick-ass story. I am so excited that someone recognized that little book, Say You Love Satan.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
Actually, before the book, it was the article in Rolling Stone that caught my eye. They were the first ones to really detail.
Right. I love that story, man.
And so we were just filmed. That was around 91.
And what is this? You did a short film?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's called My Sweet Satan. And it's basically that murder case, you know, Ricky, Jimmy, and Gary.
Oh, dude, I need to see that. Love it.
Yeah, and I just needed to make something at that point to show investors that we had grown as filmmakers, because all I could show them was incomplete footage from Charlie's Family or Deadbeat at Dawn, my first feature. And so we stopped trying to fundraise for Charlie, and we raised $5,000, and we made this short. And it was very polished, and I'm very proud of it. And it certainly helped in getting further money for the Manson family.
You ever going to put that out for a release?
It did get a release. It was put out by Film Threat Video.
Oh, I saw it. I saw that, man. Oh, yeah, and the Film Threat. I love that. Oh, I love it. That's great.
And
you should be proud of it. That's great. And this
was put on DVD release of Deadbeat at Dawn, which happened, I don't know, about 5 years ago, but that thing's out of print. And I'm just looking to find a new home for Deadbeat at Dawn and My Sweet Satan and Roadkill and some of the other shorts I made.
Oh, yeah, you know, I really...
Success with the Manson family will lead to a better deal.
Is it called Say You Love Satan, the movie?
No, it's called My Sweet
Satan. My Sweet Satan. I loved it, dude. That was wicked cool. It was really good.
We'll be right back.
do you think of this new movie? I guess there's someone trying to make a Ricky Six or something like that.
It was made, you know, it's been done for years.
Have
I
you seen it?
No, really? It's I guess on the bootleg circuit, but you know, out of because I'm a filmmaker, I try not to contact bootleggers too often.
Oh, come on.
That's true.
Well, I know other filmmakers that are burning discs and downloading stuff, you know.
Well, declaration of principles. So.
Well, no, I dig what you're saying.
But if somebody had a copy of it, I'd definitely watch it. I heard it was really tripped out and good. You know, I'm very sorry that the atmosphere, you know, when it was finished, didn't allow for it to get a theatrical release. You know, I don't even know if it's been put out on DVD.
So, well, it hasn't, and I can't wait to see it. And you know, as far as bootlegs and stuff, are you against downloading and all that stuff?
Yeah, pretty much in principle. You know, I mean, you know, people do it all the time.
Uh-huh.
But you know, as an artist, especially an independent who has to, you know, fight like a dog to get royalties or whatever, you know,
right.
You cop an attitude that's not shared by the mainstream or, you know, the majority of people, you know.
Well, I've published stuff for 20 years and I create content and stuff like that, so I have, and the stuff I do is for a very specific audience. It's not mass marketed, so if it gets on the downloads, it makes it hard to make a dollar, but at the same time, I think it's sort of, you find more customers too, you know.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, it's a double-edged sword. I mean, you know, certainly on a publicity level, its power is undeniable.
But with me, if I were to download anything, I wouldn't want the shitty bootleg. I wouldn't want the shitty download. I want to, if it's quality and it's good, I want to go out and buy it anyway to show my support, and I just want the real thing anyway.
Yeah, maybe that's what bootlegs actually lead to for most people, I think. You know, if they get a hold of something, you know, that they really latch onto, they're going to want, you know, the finished work or the polished version.
That's what I do, and I mean, I guess I'm so attracted to downloads because of all the shitty entertainment that's out there anyway. I'm sick of paying for shit anyway.
Right on.
You know, it's so much garbage, don't you think? It's not a lot of good stuff being made. Do you like any movies that have been made recently?
No, not really. The only thing that really, you know, I thought was pretty dynamite was Kill Bill Volume 1 and 2.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah, you know, I mean, Tarantino, you know, plays by his own rules. He's got a style. He's sticking to it. And he's just entertaining. I mean, he's a great filmmaker. Otherwise, I've just been really disappointed, especially with the remakes of horror classics, like Texas Chainsaw Massacre was unnecessary. I mean, that film wasn't a total disaster, but, you know, it was just unnecessary. And
did you like the first Texas Chainsaw Massacre?
I love it. I think it's a defining movie of the horror genre.
Really?
Yeah. I think, you know, its power, especially it had on me, is pretty incredible.
Right on. So you are a fan of horror?
Oh yeah. Yeah. See, huge. And I was, you know, very insulted by the, again, unnecessary and very substandard remake of Dawn of the Dead.
I didn't see that one, but
it was a roaring pile.
The Chain Massacre, you know, I didn't like the first one. It was boring to me. And the Dawn of the Dead I thought was boring, but I'm not a filmmaker. You know, anything, so I just...
Well, everybody's opinion's different.
Yeah, I didn't, and I want to say I dug it and everything, because everyone else does, but, but I didn't like the new one either. I thought that sucked. It was, I wish they would have remade it and did something really brutal or something, but, yeah. So nothing good, just Kill Bill, Volume 1 and 2.
That's the only thing that really, you know, jumps off the map.
You see? That's why the downloads are on high demand.
Yeah, and I mean, it's almost like the state of music, you know? It's like, yeah, there's one or two things out there, but otherwise it's just mass stupidity. You know, I mean, when we went from the 80s into the 90s, I was like, well, the 90s got to get a lot better because the culture of the 80s just blew. But I was wrong. I just saw it get worse, and And after 9/11, the fear in this country, I don't know, things just seem like they're in a spiral as far as the arts.
Yeah, it's crazy, man. So what are you going to do next? Wait, before we go on to that, how do people get a hold of the Manson Family? Is it on DVD?
It will be. It will be. You know, it'll be opening Halloween weekend in select cities across the country.
Really? Art houses?
Yeah, look for your art houses. I mean, I know it's going to be Los Angeles, Chicago, New York, Boston, Baltimore, Pasadena.
Yeah, see, something like...
They're adding cities every day, so just Halloween weekend, be looking for your repertory or your art theaters, and look for the Manson Family.
And then after that, the DVD release.
Yeah, and we'll hold off on that as long as we can. You know, I really want people to see this in a theater on a big screen with the six speakers and the speakers working behind them at, you know, full capacity to really enjoy the sound mix and the whole experience of, you know, just seeing it, you know, huge and on a screen, so it's most effective. You know, the thing is about home video, be it VHS or DVD, you can watch it when you want, you can turn it off when you want, you know.
You're right.
It denies the movie the power that it has when you're the captive audience.
So you want full control?
That's been my trip on getting this film done and seen the entire time, so why should I quit now?
Exactly. So is MKUltra at all involved in your plot of filmmaking?
Pardon?
It was a joke. The MKUltra joke. I was joking. I says MKUltra at all involved in your plot with your filmmaking plot?
No.
You know, mind control.
Right.
It was fun. You know, just a funny, maybe not funny. Okay. So you're a member of the process, aren't you?
I'm the founder. We're one and the same.
Ah, exactly. So, anything else? Anything else, Jim? You got a book out there? What's next?
Yeah, the book's the screenplay that was published some years ago. It's really funny. I mean, the guys from Download who did some music segments, they put out a soundtrack album years ago, and then the screenplay, the published screenplay of the book, or I mean of the film, came out in book form. And I think this is the first film ever that's had a CD and a book out before years before the film.
That's funny, man.
So, I've just been working, on music videos, and I'm writing, trying to get, you know, at least three or four scripts in presentable shape so that if the Manson Family does any business, I can get one of those launched, because I'd really like to jump into another feature.
I take it you can't talk about them?
Well, I think it's kind of pointless until, you know,
whatever,
you're up and rolling.
Someone will steal your idea. They'll download that shit quick.
Either that or you're just shooting your mouth off of, about something that's not in place yet. And I certainly learned my lesson with the Manson Family about doing that.
Yeah. So, well, this must be...
Yeah, I thought this film was going to come out like 10 years ago. You know, but...
So how does it hold up today to 10 years ago?
Oh, I think it's I wouldn't change a frame. I wouldn't change a frame.
Right on, man. So it's timeless, huh?
Well, it's when we were making it, it was already about an era that was in the past. And, you know, all of our art direction, everything, it's very 60s except for the segment set in the 90s. And I think at this point it is just like it's a little time capsule piece, yeah.
Right on, man. So I guess you're going to do a lot of stuff around Halloween?
Yeah, I mean, I'll be hosting the premiere out here at the New Art Theater, and, getting very busy trying to do what other promotions I can for it, as well as, like I said, trying to get something off the ground here.
Cool, man. You got any... I think we're going to sign off, or how do people get a hold of you? Any way? No way?
No way, right now.
That's good, right?
Well, yeah, right now. I mean, basically, they can get a hold of me by contacting Jay Bliznick or Brian.
But you're saying, basically, you'll have a webpage someday.
Yeah, probably probably by the spring. You know, it's just I want to get, you know, all this up and running. I want to get a new apartment. I want to get kind of settled, and then I'll be more receptive to dealing with the public at large.
Right on, man.
Just tying up loose ends.
Hey, I'm working on this this true crime tour. It's like with in Chicago, Gacy's state's attorney, the people that prosecuted him, put him to death, are going to be involved in it.
Mm-hmm.
I think Vincent Bugliosi is going to be involved in a couple of dates.
Bugliosi, the G is soft.
Bugliosi.
Yeah.
Well, I'll have to make sure to announce him if this tour happens as Bugliosi.
Yeah, we're calling him the Bug, just like the Manson girls did.
Is that it, the Bug?
Yeah.
I'll have to make sure to do that just to incite some sweat on the brow.
Mm-hmm.
But hey, is there any way you might want to be attached to any of this stuff? You want to get involved in some of this?
All I can say is just keep me abreast of what your ideas are.
I will.
And I'll look at my time schedule, and all I can say is we'll talk.
Right on, man. I guess this is it. We're signing off, then. People should check out the Manson family, right?
Absolutely. It's educational.
Excellent, man.
Charles Manson set into motion a wave of terror in Southern California. In two nights, Manson's murderous spree took the lives of at least seven people, including actress Sharon Tate and her unborn baby. The cult, or family, spoke of launching a holy war against the rich and the powerful. Many of its members were heavy users of hallucinogenic drugs, mainly LSD. The killings were bizarre and merciless. They triggered a public panic and raised the specter of drug-crazed youths slaughtering their victims at random. The Tate-LaBianca murders abruptly ended an era that's remembered today for its flower children, Beatles music, and make love, not war slogans. Who was Charles Manson? Manson was portrayed as a guitar-playing ex-convict with a following of runaway young women, his so-called family members. He was described as either a demented messiah, a psychopathic killer, or a man who controlled the minds of weaker followers. Testimony revealed that while Manson was not present at the home of director Roman Polanski the night of the murders, he planned and ordered the deaths of Sharon Tate and her guests. Americans also learned Manson was born out of wedlock to a 16-year-old prostitute in Cincinnati, Ohio. His childhood years were a series of foster homes. By 1969, Manson had served more than half his life in reform schools or prisons. He had been convicted of forgery, homosexual rape, and car theft. On April 17, 1971, Manson was sentenced to death for seven counts of murder in the first degree. A trial later that year found him guilty of two more counts of murder. Because of a change in state law, the death penalty was commuted to life in prison. Manson is now serving that sentence at San Quentin.
So, Rose, how are you?
How are you?
I've been watching you on the tube.
What do you think?
Everything.
Nothing.
Here. How's your day going?
Day's going nice. The weather here is much better than the weather in Washington, D.C. We left 4 inches of snow. And I got out here and they said this is record warm temperatures.
Yeah, I'm kind of nervous. I've been locked up in the hole a long time. So for me to come out of that cell is a whole brand new experience.
And what's the prison routine like for you?
I sit in my cell 24 hours a day.
Read?
No.
Why not?
I can, I have more, my thoughts are more interesting than anything I can read.
Watch any television?
Occasionally.
What do you watch?
I watch, I spin it around a lot. I watch a little bit of everything.
Listen to radio?
When I have one, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any friends you talk to?
I'm friend to everything I see. Everything I know, everything I feel.
What about other inmates?
I'm brother in these hallways for 40 years. With no snitching on my jacket. No asking for nobody to protect me. And walking on my own 2 feet.
You get a lot of mail.
Yeah.
What do they say? With letters.
Everybody's playing a different game with the thought. They're playing boats and planes and trains and rabbits and ducks and swings and hearts and little girls and everything that you can think of. When we started the rainbow, the rainbow, all the thoughts that go with the. The seed grows up from the ground. Everything that grows starts and grows up. You go down on the earth to plant something, and you plant these seeds, and these and this garden grows. It's the same thing with the garden that's in the mind.
I want to talk about that, but let me stay with the routine, the facts of your life for a while. What about the scorpions? You make scorpions?
I make little things out of string.
Yeah. Where do you send them?
Everywhere. Wherever they fit.
Does somebody pay you for them?
No.
Why scorpions?
Well, it's not only scorpions. I make all kinds of things. You know, scorpions is just one of the things that I happen to make. I'm spiritually allied with the scorpion and the wolf. See, spiritualism scares you people because you've got this little stereotype church that you're buying and selling, and you're trying to put God in a building. But God is much bigger than that little church. You know, and spiritualism is a lot more than they put in libraries and books.
Yeah, most religious people know that.
Yeah. Well, I'm allied with certain awarenesses of the desert. You know.
What do you miss most being in that cell?
I miss having my music because some egomaniac wants to feel important. And they keep my music away from me.
Your music is your guitar.
Yeah.
Well, they say if they give you a guitar, they got to give everybody a guitar.
That's an excuse. That's a total cop-out. I got a big jealous snake I have to deal with every day. A big, inadequate, incompetent, jealous snake that has no mind, that has no soul.
Is that a person?
He just wound up with money. You can pay him to walk backwards. You buy him and sell him. Then Wall Street.
When we sit here and talk to you, people wonder, where did Charlie Manson come from? What are your earliest memories?
I come from the heart of Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra.
But what does that mean?
Tom Mix.
Those were the people that you listened to as a child?
Yeah, Roosevelt. I come from the hills of Kentucky. I come from hard times, bologna for Sunday dinner. I come from the Depression.
You come from not knowing your father?
I know my father. My father's all men.
Yeah, but your biological father you don't know.
Section 8. All the discharged men of the Second World War raised me. Ferguson was an ensign in the Navy. He raised me. All the guys that came back from the war raises all the kids that are locked up in prisons.
What about your mother?
Mother is the icebox. Yeah. She's the penitentiary. One of my first recollections is walking in Moundsville. State prison, West Virginia. Big gray stone place. And I come to visit my mom. She was doing time there for what? Strong arm robbery. Trying to make some food, put some food on the table and give me an operation when I was a child.
That's your first, one of your earliest memories?
Yeah, I remember that. That was
Are there happy memories?
I don't have that.
You don't have that?
I don't have that yin and yang that you do.
Is that yin yang?
Yeah, and it was, you can't make me unhappy.
There's a time for living. The time keeps on flying. Think you're loving, baby, and all you do is crying. Can you feel? Are those feelings real? Look at your game, girl. Look at your game, girl. What a mad delusion. Living in that confusion, frustration and doubt. Can you ever live without the game? The sad, sad game. Mad game. Just to say your love's not enough. If on you can't be true, you can tell those lies, baby, but you're only fooling you. Can you feel? Are those feelings real? Look at your game, girl. Oh, look at your game, girl. If you can't feel, and the feelings ain't real, then you better stop trying. Or you're gonna play crying. Stop trying. Or you're gonna play crying. That's the game. Sad, sad game. Mad game. Sad.
Believe me, if I started murdering people, there'd be none of you left.
Charles Manson, now 59 years old, still wearing the swastika of defiance.
We played a lot of music, we did a lot of things, but we lived today. We lived in the day, in the now.
Liberate yourself. Lose yourself in Charlie.
It was so wonderful that it scared us.
Is Charlie Manson crazy?
Well, whatever that means. Sure, he's crazy as mad as a hatter. What difference does it make? You know, a long time ago, being crazy meant something. Nowadays, everybody's crazy.